You're listening to the Salado Paranormal Podcast, where the unknown meets investigation. From haunted locations to unexplained encounters, we dive deep into the mysteries that surround us. With your host, Mitch McLean, get ready to explore the truth beyond the veil.
Good evening, everybody. I am Mitch McLean. Welcome along to the Solano Paranormal Podcast. I am here with my co-host tonight, Sarah Lee. Hello, Sarah Lee.
Hello.
All right. So tonight we've got a great show for you guys. We're talking about haunted highways and restless roads. So, like I said, welcome back to the Solano Paranormal Podcast. I am Mitch. And riding shotgun tonight is Sarah Lee. And if you're listening in your car, settle in, because we are steering into stretches of highways where the mile markers blur, the radio loses stations, and something older than asphalt keeps pace just out of sight. We spent plenty of episodes in basements and attics, places with walls and doors. Tonight, the walls fall away. It's just you, the dark, and the long in between.
Highways are modern liminal spaces. A bridge is a moment of in between. A highway can be hours of it. Folklore warns us about thresholds, crossroads bargains, trolls under bridges, and spirits in doorways. Translate that into 20th and 21st centuries, and you get the interstate, a man-made river you enter and don't truly leave until you slip off at your exit. People underestimate how psychologically strange that is. Your sensors compressed into a cone of light. The rest becomes a suggestion.
And the human cost is real. Roads end life suddenly. There's often no chance for goodbye. No narrative that ties a bow on the story. From an investigator standpoint, suddenness and unfinished business show up again and again in haunting reports. I don't believe the road itself is evil, but I do believe it remembers.
Tonight we'll tackle patterns, the psychology that makes night driving so weird, and the reports that refuse to fit easily explanations. Phantom hitchhikers who never quite make it home, spectral vehicles that tailgate and vanish, guardians that wave you down before the blind curve, and we'll also talk about what to do if something taps on your window at 2 a.m. Hint, swerving is not step one.
And if you're new here, we don't just collect spooky stories. We analyze them. We compare language, weather, lighting, topography, and witness behavior. And when people who don't know each other describe the same thing at the same place, that's when we leave our desks and go stand on the shoulder ourselves. So buckle up. The road ahead is not empty. All right, Sarah Lee. Let's start talking about haunted roads and highways. Have you ever experienced anything on a haunted road or a highway? A phantom hitchhiker or a specter on the side of the road?
I've not specifically. I've had issues in like fog where it was, you know, when you're talking patterns and psychology, did I see something in the fog, or was I thinking I saw something in the fog? Was it there or not? It's really hard to tell. But I've heard a lot of stories from other people who really have had these experiences.
Yeah. Have you heard about the black dog?
I believe so. Yeah. Tell me more about that one. I think
the black dog is something that's reported by drivers at nighttime when they start getting tired. There's often numerous reports of sightings of a black dog running in front of them and making them slow down and hit the brakes, or it's just sitting on the side of the road as they pass by and they see a black dog. Now it's commonly associated with that effect you get when you start making patterns in your brain. I believe we're going to talk about that later in one of the other segments. But there's a pattern, like a psychological effect where when you get sleepy and stuff, and the nighttime causes that narrow tunnel vision, and your brain is looking to make patterns out of what it's seen in front of it, and it makes all these random patterns. And for some reason, a black dog is one of the things that, a lot of drivers have reported seeing.
Yeah, now that you've talked about it, I haven't heard it specifically on the freeway or the road, but I know when I've watched some like YouTube videos and TikTok videos and things like that, where people are out in the dark venturing around, they're hunting or they're ending a hiking trip, a camping trip, when they're down, you know, dirt roads and stuff like that, there'll be black dog, like a black dog in the woods, kind of running alongside of their car, their truck, or if they're in one of those like the ATV type vehicles. I've seen videos where, you know, they've shown stuff like that. If it's real or not, you know, they look real.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, highways are a crazy place. There's a thing that I believe in called the stone tape theory, where stone or material similar to stone, maybe even asphalt, can absorb the energy of traumatic events and occurrences, and then they replay them when the conditions, the atmospheric conditions are just right, and it almost acts like a record player. It replays a moment in time, and that's what we would call not an intelligent haunting, but residual energy.
I think I've heard of those like in heavy like limestone areas.
Limestone is extremely porous, and they believe that's one of the reasons limestone is such a good recorder of emotion. If you're near any limestone structures and stuff, there's a good chance that you're going to see some residual energy activity replayed. You just need the right atmospheric conditions and just be a little bit lucky to be in the right place at the right time, and you'll see maybe a replay of some residual event from the past, which is amazing to think of. Now, intelligent hauntings, I believe, are what's probably most commonly reported on freeways and highways and stuff when it comes to phantom hitchhikers, because many of these reports, the people actually interact with the person who stops to give them a ride. You know, they tell them an address, they physically get in the car, open the door and get in the car, close the door. And then the person drives off and starts talking over their shoulder, and the next minute they look behind them, the person's gone. You know?
Yeah, I've heard variations too, where they ask to be dropped off at a very specific spot.
Yeah.
And they watch them get out and walk into like a house or something, but leave something behind. So like the next day they realize they left that thing, so they go to the house and try to like give it back. And the people either don't live there anymore, or it's the family and they're like, that was our daughter who died 6 years ago.
Well, funny you mention that, because we've got a story later on in the show very similar to that. So buckle up for that one. All right. All right. Let's move on to segment two. Now, we're going to talk about patterns and psychology of the road. All right, so let's build a foundation. First, tragedy maps. We overlay crash data, memorial locations, and witness reports. Now, clusters pop. A single sighting can be anything. Clusters hint at a story the landscape is telling. Mile 23 collects pale figure accounts. Mile 24 is quiet. That contrast matters more than a single dramatic tale.
Then the environment. Sodium lamps flicker at frequencies that make the edge of your vision misbehave. Infrasound from wind over culverts can raise your heart rate and give you the sense of being watched. Concrete can toss echoes in ways that mimic footsteps outside the vehicle. We know all of this because eliminating natural causes doesn't ruin the mystery, it actually sharpens it. When the explanation is exhausted and the pattern remains, that's when we pay attention.
Psychology next. Night driving constricts the world to that triangle of light. Your brain is a survival machine. It paints in the dark with old fears and cautionary tales. That's not a weakness. It keeps you alive. But psychology doesn't explain why three different drivers, 10 years apart, all describe a woman with damp hair staring straight ahead near the same turnout. The mind can misfire. It rarely misfires, of course.
Yeah, culture colors the same structure. In Japan, bowing figures near tunnels, sometimes leaving wet footprints that at the end of the wall. Mexico, La Rumorosa, where voices coax you towards the guardrail in sudden gusts. In the Appalachians, lights that pace your truck along old mining roads. The different paint, same skeletons, an encounter that punctures the sealed cabin and reorders your next 1,000 miles.
From our field notes, patterns that raise our eyebrows look like this. Number one, geography repeats. Same bend, same mile marker. Number two, language repeats. Different witnesses reach for the same odd word. Soaked, mud in the cuffs, glass breath. Number three, behavior repeats. The figure never looks at the driver. The hand never touches the handle. The lights never pass, even when you slow. When all three stack, we mark a hot spot and return with better tools.
And tools really matter. We run dash cams with high dynamic range to push into the dark. We log barometric pressure and temperature inside the vehicle as well as out. Cab microclimates sometimes shift before we see anything. We mark EM spikes, but we don't chase them. Cars are big electric magnets. More telling is synchronized anomalies. A seatbelt chime with no passenger paired with a temperature dip and a recorded voice memo where the witness whispers without knowing why. When layers sink, the hairs go up on the back of our necks.
Bottom line is respect fear as a data point. Filter for the tricks of light and sound, and then listen for the chorus. When a place keeps telling the same story through different mouths, believe that the place is trying to be heard. All right. So let's talk about segment two, patterns and psychology of the road. Now that the psychology of the road is crazy because, I mean, I've had it happen to me many times where I've almost wrecked. I don't feel tired and I'm driving. And the next minute I'm like, oh shit. bouncing my head off the steering wheel and stuff. And then I'm like, pull over, get out, get some fresh air, a cup of coffee or whatever. Get myself together and then carry on. But the psychology of the road is absolutely nuts. I mean, I've seen some crazy stuff when I've been driving and getting tired out of the shadows and things on the side of the road. I've got an amazing story to tell you guys later about a truck driver friend of mine from Utah who had an amazing encounter on the road. It was out of this world. You just won't believe it, but I'll keep that for the next segment when we get to it, I believe. All right, so night driving constricts the world to that triangle of light. Your brain is a survival machine. It paints in the dark with old fears and cautionary tales. So what does that mean? It means the way your brain operates at night, it's looking for those patterns and the shadows and the little bits of light that it sees. It's looking for anything that it can rationalize and explain what it's seeing. Your brain is an incredible machine, and that's what it does, Sarah-Lee, right?
Mm-hmm. It works really hard to put all those patterns together for you.
Yeah, and it causes you to see things and hallucinate things that just are not there. We talked about the black dog theory, where people see black dogs on the side of the road or running in front of them, which make them brake and slow down. I often see shadows of trees and overpasses. It's the weirdest thing. I'll be driving down the freeway and I'm not tired, but it's nighttime and your eyes are stuck in that triangle of light like we're talking about. And you're focused tunnel vision straight ahead. And your eyesight narrows in, and all of a sudden you start seeing those different shapes and shadows and stuff. And I usually see it almost like it's trees along the side of the road. Even if there's no trees, I'll see the shadows of trees. Then occasionally I'll see the shadow of what I think is an overpass. And you know, it's the weirdest thing. I know my brain's tricking me. Have you ever had any of those types of sensations driving at night?
Yeah, mine I think are more related to light. I either think I see headlights behind me with the car coming up fast, but nothing ever passes me. Like I'll get over into the slower lane, but then there's nothing. Or vice versa. You think you're coming up on somebody going slow and you see the red taillights, but then as you get closer, they just kind of shimmer away. And then like for people who don't understand or haven't seen their own thing, I think most humans have seen the daylight version. You know, when it's hot out and you got that long stretch of highway and you get that shimmer on the road.
Yeah.
You know, I think most everybody sees that. So it's kind of like the nighttime version of that.
Right. No, absolutely. And like you said, geography repeats we look for. Same bend, same mile marker. So if we're looking for a psychological event, that's what we're looking for. Repeated events. Language repeats where different witnesses reach for the same odd word. Now, what we're talking about there is words talked by a spirit, spoken by a spirit, or a phrase spoken by a spirit. It could be the given address, or it could be, you know, anything the spirit says to the person. If it's repeated and the same witness, different witnesses report the same thing over long periods of different times, then you have to take notice of it. Those individual events then suddenly become patterns. And that's what we look for in paranormal investigating.
And we try to debunk some of the patterns too.
Absolutely. Part of our own job is to try and debunk our own evidence. We wouldn't be very good paranormal investigators if we just believed everything we collected is automatically being paranormal. That's why we do walkthroughs. The day before we do a paranormal investigation, we'll go to the location in daylight hours and we'll do a walkthrough and we'll interview the owner of the premises or whoever's involved. We'll take some instruments there, like EMF meters, EVP recorders, different equipment that we'll take along to record the environment in a daylight setting and try and find any hot spots like wiring in the walls that cause EMF spikes, which we had at our most recent investigation. We had one of the occasions where the meter was spiking next to a certain wall, and we understood very quickly that was not a paranormal occurrence. Some paranormal investigators are ruthless and they would say, oh, we got an EMF spike. Oh, look at that. It's evidence. No, we try and debunk our own evidence.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, let's move on to segment 3, Phantom Hitchhikers. Now, this segment is a good one. Phantom Hitchhikers. I love this story. The Phantom Hitchhiker is the road's archetype. A stranger appears at the edge of need. A driver offers passage. The destination is never truly reached. The story is so old it outlives cars. Horseback versions exist in the 19th century papers. What changes is the upholstery?
Resurrection Mary is the marquee name, but countless Marys haunt other postcodes. Sorry. Some speak it in weather, breathe like fog, voice like rain on glass. Some are silent, but for the address they press into your mind. A few leave wet footprints on the mat that ends 6 inches from the door. Those details reoccur across reports from people who don't trade fork loaf for fun.
Hawaii gives us another lens. Pele is a hitchhiker testing generosity. Help her and you pass. Refuse and you may meet a stalled engine on a blind curve. Latin America's Dama de Blanco flips the moral. She's warning, not testing. And those who heed her arrive home. I don't need the stories to agree. I need them to rhyme. And they do.
Skeptics counter with fatigue and hyponagia. Fair, but fatigue doesn't make your rear seatbelt light flash three times in the turn lane while the cabin temperature drops 4 degrees and your voice recorder, totally by accident because you hit record to dictate direction, captures a second whisper under yours saying the same street name you're trying to remember. We have that file. It's not proof. It's weight on the scale.
Now, would I stop for a hitchhiker at 2 a.m.? No. No. Absolutely not. Would I stop for a story? Every time. Because buried in the tree line of these reports is something simple and human. The urge to finish the journey. Maybe that's what the roadside asks of us. To witness that someone is still trying to go home. Interesting. So the Phantom Hitchhiker, Sarah Lee. We spoke a little earlier and you said you've never come across a Phantom Hitchhiker or anything. I haven't either.
No.
It's one of
lots
those
of stories.
Yeah, I've heard loads of stories from different people over the years about picking people up and stuff. One of the most odd stories I heard was like an Uber driver who turned up to pick a passenger. And when he got there, the person was standing at the side, get in the car, said the address, and when the person took off, they started talking to them and they get no reply, and they turned around and the person had completely vanished. The person had initially got in the car. He'd seen the door open and close when the person got in. He wasn't necessarily looking over his shoulder watching. He was just watching the road ahead, waiting for the person to get in the car, and heard them getting in, said the address. And then when he turned around, there was no one there, you know. So that those types of stories make, because where did the account come from? Where did they pick up originate? How does a ghost manipulate a driver system like Uber? You know, it shows. I don't know how we explain that type of thing.
No, and it'll be interesting because I've noticed myself taking Ubers and Lyfts more recently in like the last year, maybe a little bit longer. A lot of drivers actually are having like reverse cameras now too that actually like records their backseat passengers in case like they act up and stuff like that. They have evidence.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see if we start getting some of this on camera. That would be really neat to see. Because I know there's tons of these stories and they usually have something to do with either somebody getting in a car accident or somebody being murdered. And a lot of times around cemeteries, the murdered ones are usually around cemeteries and the car accidents, just random roads.
Yeah. Now, it's a sad story that we said. Like I said, what is the roadside asking of us? Maybe it's just to witness that someone is still trying to go home. And that's really sad that you've got all these spirits out there that for one reason or another never got to complete their journey home. They never got to their final destination.
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, oftentimes repeated people are seeing these, not just one person, but multiple people, sometimes over the span of years. So these people are trying to get home for ever.
Yeah, and it's constant. I mean, and to me, those are not residual hauntings. Those are intelligent hauntings because they appear and they act intelligently to you. They'll flag you down, they'll thumb you down and you stop, or you see them on the side of the road, you know, wet and in the rain, and your moral compass makes you stop and offer them a ride, and they'll often get in and interact with you for a while, and then all of a sudden you look behind you and they're gone, you know. And these stories are repetitive across not just our culture, but across
everywhere.
Every culture. You know, I mean, these types of phantom hitchhiker stories where people
even
see
if it's
the side of the road.
Cultures that don't use cars as often, they see like, you know, they see them on subways and buses, or they see them, you know, on the side of the roads when they're riding their bikes down the road. So it's not just, you know, societies with cars too.
No, absolutely not. And like we said, we talked about Hawaii in Japan, in Latin America. Now, Japan's an interesting place. Japan has so much, it's steeped in folklore about phantom hitchhikers and people on the side of the road looking like spirits and stuff. There's the big one that we spoke a little earlier about the spirits that stand at the entrances of tunnels and mm-hmm. they bow to you as you enter the tunnel. And if you heed their advice and slow down and do the things right, you get home safe. And if you don't, you know, bad things can happen. Now, you remember, I don't know if you were watching that part of the podcast that we did with the other paranormal group a couple of days ago. We had a lady from Japan on the podcast along with us, and she was telling us, she was from Tokyo, and she was telling us how haunted Tokyo is and that the locals are steeped in paranormal tradition. They say they can't leave their front door without witnessing the paranormal. It happened. She said it happens in broad daylight as well there.
Yeah.
And it just got to ask the question, why does it happen so much in a different culture? Is it that because that culture is just more spiritually aware?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, you think so?
I think so, yeah. Because, I mean, I know in our culture specifically, you know, as children, you know, we have imaginary friends and we're told to knock it off, you know, stop imagining, stop being creative.
Yeah.
And so I believe that kids are born with the instinct to be able to see spirits. But because of the way our society, at least here in America, is, you know, we're raised to not see the stuff. If you can see the stuff, it's bad. Absolutely. So we're taught not to, and some people cannot learn how to do it. So that's where we get the mediums and the sensitives and psychics and stuff like that. And then other people, maybe in their future, if they decide they want to become sensitive, they can try to relearn it and reopen themselves. But it's not easy, and it's not easy for a lot of people. So I think just here in America, we don't like to think as much about ghosts and spirits, and especially, you know, little kids seeing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, over there, I think they really do have a different, I don't know if the term is appreciation for spirits, but they definitely do have a different feeling for them than we do here.
No, absolutely right. And I'm one of those people who, I like you said, there's various reasons people see things or don't see things. And I've seen a lot as a child, Sarah Lee. I mean, I had a lot of experiences as a child. I used to go to bed and I'd be lying in my bed and I would start hearing whispering. It would be two adult males whispering. And it'd be like, you could hear them talking, but you just couldn't quite make out what they were saying. And then you would feel one of them sit down on the bed and I would actually feel the compression of the mattress, as if someone was actually sitting down on the bed. And then I would hear them whispering louder and louder. And I would get so afraid that I would close my eyes. I would have my pillow over my head. And I think most of the time I passed out in genuine fear rather than fall asleep. I think I was passing out in genuine fear. I had those nightly for years and I couldn't tell anybody. I couldn't talk about it with my mom. So what did I do? I shut it out. Didn't happen overnight. But I would pretend like it was not there when it was happening. I'd say to it, you're not here, you're not real, you're not real, you're not real, you're not real. And I'd repeat it.
And I believe highly in intentions and energy. And so, yeah, if you're saying over and over and over, your intention is that it's not real, you shut yourself down. It's not real, you can't.
And that's what happened. I eventually shut myself down to it, down to that side of the paranormal anyway. What I continued to get was sleep paralysis. And I would get
that's harder
out of sleep paralysis. Sleep paralysis is a horrendous event. Have you ever had it?
No, I think what I had was more night terrors because mine was more, I was still seeing the stuff like while I was still asleep and then like coming out of the sleep, screaming and unable to move for a few seconds. So I didn't have the feeling of like something sitting on me afterwards, like sleep alert. you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, my sleep paralysis events, they ranged wildly. Sometimes I would have something jumping on me on my chest. A little troll demon almost like jumping on my chest. I spoke about that in one of our previous podcasts. How I had an event that I wasn't extremely proud of, and I feel I was punished that night and sent a demon. A demon was sent to torment me and just give me a warning. Other sleep paralysis events have been just almost like a shadow figure in the doorway watching me as I've woke up. Others have been like swooping ghosts, like actual spirits swarming through the air and dive bombing my face and pulling away at the last second and terrifying me. You know, my sleep paralysis dreams have varied a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine as night terrors, they usually consisted of like something I was doing that day or like going to bed or where I was at. And then the monster would come and like scream in my face various ways. And then that's what would wake me up. And I would think I was waking up screaming. And that's where I was paralyzed, was I really thought I was screaming, but people around me would be like, no, you were not screaming. And then a few seconds or a minute or whatever, then I could start moving again.
Yeah.
My most memorable one was we were camping actually up here at Lake Solano, if you've ever been there.
Yes.
And we were kind of up on the hill. It's a campground that's kind of like the spots are on like hills.
Yep.
And so we were on one of the upper hills. And so to me, that felt like, you know, we were projected over the rest of the campground down below us. And I was sleeping in the tent, and in my dream, like I had gone through a good day with my family at the campground. We played in the river, and then I was laying there sleeping, and then the creature opened the zipper and stuck its head into the tent. And then that's where I started screaming, and then woke up thinking I was screaming.
Right.
And when I asked my family the next day, like, they're like, so I was like terrified. Like, did I just wake up the whole campground, like screaming, you know, or is somebody going to call the cops? So I like woke up my ex at the time, and I'm like, hey, you know, that didn't wake you up. And he's like, no, I didn't hear anything. And my kids didn't wake up. When I talked to him the next morning, nobody heard anything. So it was like, I was paralyzed in that scream as I was waking up. But it was just so weird. And it's so memorable because it was like, I thought I had woken up the entire campground, you know, somebody thinking I got murdered or something. But so it's not quite the same as what you were dealing with. It was more like in my dream, but then freezing as I'm waking up.
Yeah.
So not the long freeze people get afterwards.
Yeah. Now, like we were talking about phantom hitchhikers, let's get back on topic a minute. Mm-hmm. Now, like you said, skeptics counter with fatigue and hypnagogia, which is that condition I was talking about earlier in tonight's episode, where your brain tries to make patterns and recognize shapes. And those kind of things can often be the actual cause of these ghostly sightings at the sides of road and stuff like that. They absolutely make up a huge proportion of the reports. Where it makes no sense is when those reports are repeated on the same stretch of road at this, maybe the same weather conditions, maybe the same time of night. And we're going to talk about some of these stories just in a couple of minutes. But those types of stories are crazy.
Mm-hmm. And they're very common.
They are very common. They're so common. People see things there all the time. It could absolutely be psychological effects. Absolutely. A lot of them, I'm sure. A large majority of them, probably 85, 90% of them, are down to psychological effects. But when you do the investigation on those stretches of roads, you all of a sudden discover that there's been multiple reports on those same stretches from eyewitnesses over decades, maybe.
And sometimes if you do the research, you can actually find like the person you were seeing and the incident report of what happened. Like it was in the newspaper that, you know, somebody got in a crash or was hit or murdered. So you can actually find fact-based evidence for the activity itself. It may not prove seeing the ghost, but at least that that has happened. And you wouldn't have known that ahead of time.
No, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, moving on, Sarah Lee, let's move on to segment four. We're going to talk case files. Three roads, three encounters. Okay, here we go, guys. Case one, the varsity jacket, Solano County. The weather, hard rain, wind driving sheets across the lane. The witness was an ER nurse after a 12-hour shift. She was lucid, no alcohol. Lane assist was active, and she sees a figure on the shoulder, a teen boy in a letterman jacket, dark with water, hair plastered, arms wrapped across his ribs. He doesn't flag her down. He simply exists in the corner of her vision, enough to trigger that moral reflex. I can't leave him out here.
She unlocks the door. He slides in without a word. The heater blasts, his hands don't pink up the way cold hands do. They sit like coins. When she asks him if he's hurt, he says, "Didn't make it home," which reads like the answer in an epitaph. He gives an address. She knows the street, older houses, porches with wind chimes.
Details that stuck with me. She noticed the smell of river mud, not rain, like algae and silt. The seatbelt icon flicks on for a second, then off. Two blocks from the turn, the cabin pressure changes. Her words in her ears pop. She glances at the passenger and sees the jacket empty, collapsed into itself, as if the boy simply stepped out of being. There is water on the mat in the shape of shoe soles that do not trail to the door.
At the address, porch light on, a woman answers with the guarded politeness of someone who has rehearsed this encounter. "Was he wearing the jacket?" she asks first. The witness nods, asks how she knew. The mother says, "Because he always is. He drowned 5 springs ago. Friends jumped from the trestle. He hit wrong and vanished under. When they found him, his jacket had ballooned like a trapped breath. Some night, strangers bring him home." The family tried to refuse the story the first year. By the second, they learned to accept the kindness and relight the bulb.
We returned with permission, documented the path from the trestle to the address, and captured EM spikes near the fence line, which we don't lean on because power feeds are everywhere. More interesting, an audio bed where wind drops and a single syllable, "Ma," rides under the chimes. Could be anything, but the nurse had used the same syllable describing the sound he made in a car.
The takeaways here: repeated witness language, river, smell, empty jacket, a rehearsed reception at the address, and a grief ritual, the porch light that invites closure without demanding it. If hauntings are conversations, this one has learned its lines.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's a very interesting case study there, Sarah Lee. We were kind of touching on something that you said earlier, and I said that we had something coming up about it. You mentioned a case where someone you knew had experienced very similar, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, picked somebody up and drove to the address they told them, and then they got out of the car, walked up to the house. They didn't really pay attention to see if they went inside and drove away. They noticed something in the car the next morning. So after work, they drove it back to the house, and the family member was like, "They've been dead for years." But it didn't sound like the family was used to it, like in this story.
Right.
And it was a tangible item. It was like,
absolutely.
Pick it up. I don't remember what it was. I just remember. I don't know if it was a wallet or a phone or something.
Yeah, and in this case study, it is exactly the same scenario. The letterman jacket was always left behind, which makes you wonder how many letterman jackets not trying to be funny about it, but how many Letterman jackets did the mother, has the mother collected over the years from people?
Or did the ghost keep stealing it back from the
or
family?
Does it keep disappearing from the family again and and going back? I mean, these are the questions that you've got to ask. I mean, because
is the jacket on loop? Is it residual?
Right. I mean, it makes no sense. Is it? Does it only seem physical for a short time, and then it goes back to the other realm, or whatever, back to the spirit? I don't know where the loop starts repeating again. I don't know, but it makes a question like, gosh, how many Letterman jackets does a mother have to collect?
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of a question in our forum on the website where somebody had asked, like, why are ghosts in the clothes they're in? Like, sometimes they're in the clothes they died in. Sometimes they're seen in other clothes. Like, what? So it was an interesting topic. So you can go out to the website. It'll be linked.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Case two we're going to talk about now. The switchback, high desert. Witness was a long-haul truck driver for 30 years experience. No nonsense. He sends us his ELD logs and dash cam without being asked. The time is 3:12 in the morning. The weather, mist is pooling in low cuts. There's a temperature inversion. He crests a hill into a leftward curve carved into a talus slope. In his headlights, a man at the shoulder. Both arms windmilling the universal slow down signal.
He taps on the brakes harder than he likes. Hazards on, downshifts, fills the cargo push. But by the time he stops, the man is gone. But he didn't walk away. He vanished from the space where he should be still in view. The driver steps down, angry and a little spooked. 50 yards ahead, a fresh rock slide has erased the lane. Wet stones, grit, aerosolizing in the beams. His radios, highway patrol, sets triangles, waits, and shakes for the 10 minutes because adrenaline has nowhere to go.
Now, the part that chews on the ribs, the dash cam shows the curve, the beams, the sudden brake lights reflecting in the talus. And no man. The driver knows what he saw, but the camera doesn't. Now, the possibilities are the camera angle missed the shoulder, or mist distorted the range, or his brain invented a rescuer to justify an instinct, or, and I don't rule this out, something old in that slope decided he'd done enough diesels.
We drove that road a week later. The shoulder where he stopped overlooks a run-out gully packed with stones the size of ovens. A guardian myth would be tidy here, but tidy isn't the goal. What we can say is that a human being lived through a scenario where he should not have, and his behavior, breaking where the footage says nothing is there, aligns with a warning he can't otherwise account for.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. So that's a crazy encounter. And that's one that truck drivers, as you talk to truck drivers, they're some of the best paranormal witnesses you'll find, because they're on the road so long, so often, and drive so many hours a day that they see all sorts of things on the roads. They see death all the time on the roads, other trucks wiping out, completely wiping out. They see it all the time with these long haul drivers. They see everything. You talk to them and I guarantee you they'll have some stories to tell you.
Yep, they've got a lot of tales.
No, for sure. Now, one of the tales that I've got is from my friend Scott in Utah, who is a long-haul truck driver, a heavy-haul truck driver. So he carries all the heaviest equipment all over the country, the big, wide, long loads. He does those. And he had an experience, and I found it fascinating. He can't explain it to this day, and he lives in, he wants an explanation for it. He just doesn't know what. He was driving late at night, early hours in the morning, and he was starting to get tired, and his eyes were getting heavy, and all the things were happening. He'd wound down his window to let some fresh air in. That wasn't helping anymore. So he's like, I've got to find somewhere to get off the road and park for the night. Now, like a mirage, all of a sudden, this truck stop appears. ahead of him. And he's like, oh my God, a truck stop. Fantastic. I'll get pull off here, get some sleep, and I'll be great. So he pulls off the road, pulls into what he believes is a truck stop. Now he's adamant. Bear, keep this in mind. He's adamant that he pulls into a truck stop. He tells me the brand of the truck stop. The I'm not going to name it on my podcast and give it publicity because then I need to name them all. But it was a truck stop on freeways all over the country, and he's seen it all lit up. So he pulls off into the truck stop, he says, goes into the back of the truck stop, pulls into the truck parking area, finds a spot, climbs out of his cab, into the back of the cab, into where his bed area is, and just climbs into bed and passes out until the morning. Here's where it gets creepy. He wakens up in the morning, climbs out of his bed, climbs in his cab expecting to see all these trucks around him and this big truck stop that he had drove into the night before. Where he actually was a pitch black. Now, it wasn't pitch black now because it was the morning, but it would have been pitch black the night before because there was no lights around the area in the parking lot. It was completely unlit. So it would have been a pitch black parking lot of an old church he drove into. Now, the questions beggar. Number one, how did he see a pitch black parking lot in church? How did he see those things? From the side of the road as he's driving by, if they're pitch black, if there's no lights, how would they know to get off? So it was like some guardian angel had given him some mental image of a truck stop.
Yeah, help guide him.
Somewhere that he would feel safe coming off the road and going to. Because he'd said himself, if I'd have known there was an old abandoned church down there with a big parking lot, I wouldn't down there, he said, because I wouldn't have felt safe. He said, so I wouldn't have went down there. He said, so the fact that I seen a truck stop, it's like something overrid his senses and told him, this is your only safe haven. This is where you need to go. Yeah, so
that's a crazy one.
It's a kind of crazy one. Can you imagine pulling off, like, seeing this big lit up travel stop, truck stop on the side of the freeway, and you're driving in and you park up, and then you're waking up in the morning and you're another place completely.
Yeah, well, and that he was so tired that he went straight to sleep and didn't get out to use the bathroom or go grab a snack.
No,
that's what most of us do at those places when we pull over,
Yep. Yep, no, he was so tired that he was just looking for a place to get off the freeway so that he could pass out for the night. And that's exactly what he'd done. And then he wakens up in the morning and there's nothing around him. He's in this empty parking lot of an abandoned church. Mm-hmm. And how he would have known in the pitch black to get off the freeway, to drive down to where this pitch black church was, how to get into the church parking lot for one in a big oversized truck. And then, how to know that it would be big enough for him to fit for one and be able to get back out again.
Trucks are huge. You can't just pull into any parking lot.
No, exactly. So that was a big case for me. And I'd love to investigate that more. With him, but he just has no explanation for it at all.
Yeah.
None. Anyway, case three, Bluebell Hill, Kent, and the UK. The bride who runs, old legends, modern crashes, police logs stack like hymnals. Some night drivers swerve to miss a woman and hit the only tree on a straight run. Other nights, no form appears, only a cheated heartbeat and a brake tap that spreads car to car like a yawn.
We comb the reports for the non-cinematic details. People mention a sensation of silk across the knuckles on the wheel, as if the veil had brushed through the car. Others describe the world going thin to their word. just before the figure bolts from the verge. That thinness, call it arousal, call it PSI sensitivity, precedes the sighting often enough that we started logging it as a field on our forms.
The critics will say expectation drives the encounter. You've read about the bride, so you see her. Fair, but expectation does not move traffic waves. The tap of the brakes phenomenon occurs on nights when no driver reports the figure at all. Something is modulating behavior across strangers who cannot see one another's feet. That deserves more curiosity than a smirk.
Between these three roads, we see three functions of a roadside apparitions. The unfinished journey trying to return, the guardian who interrupts a fatal timeline, and the residual loop that bends behavior with or without an image. I don't need a single theory to stitch them together. I need field craft that respects all three.
All right. Now, Route 66. Ghost lights. Dozens of old stretches host strange orbs. Headlights that appear in the distance. Approach, then vanish without passing. Families park to watch. Explanations range from refraction to geology. But the reliability of the lights turns skeptics into patient observers.
Japan's haunted tunnels. Nearly every prefecture has at least one infamous tunnel. Faceless men watching from alcoves, women bowing at the entrance. Drivers report icy hands brushing their shoulders inside sealed cars. Tunnels are engineered thresholds. Thresholds collect stories.
La Rumorosa, Baja, California. A stretch notorious for accidents and for whispers in the wind that draw you towards the guardrail. Spectral hitchhikers, phantom vehicles, and a cliffside that hums its grief. People respect the speed limit there because the land insists. All right, so that's a good case study there from Bluebell Hill in Kent in the UK, The Bride Who Runs. That's an interesting one. A bride on the side of the road. I mean, it's almost anybody would stop. Have you seen like somebody in a wedding dress on the side of the road trying to hitch a ride? I guarantee that probably everybody would stop, the, you know, for her. Somebody would definitely stop for her. Because it'd be such an uncommon sight, and you would assume naturally that she's in some sort of trouble. Like maybe her car's broke down and she's trying to get to her wedding or something. You know, you would be like, oh my God, a bride, I need to stop and help.
Yep. Or a runaway bride that's trying to get away from the wedding.
Yeah, or a runaway bride who's trying to, yeah, get away from the wedding, exactly. But either way, you would, if you see a woman in a wedding dress on the side of the road, yeah, I pretty much think you would stop.
Yeah, there's something about a wedding dress that's going to make you have some feels of some sort.
No, absolutely. Oh my gosh. All right, so we'll move on to segment five, spectral vehicles. Now, to the machines, the first time a trucker told me a semi materialized in his mirrors and then was simply gone, I filed it under fatigue. The fifth time from a different state with the same cadence and swear words pattern.
Accounts cluster around two types. Type A, the predator, high beams closing far too fast. Pressure in the cab, the animal panic of prey. You brace for the impact that never arrives. And then there's type B, the escort, an old pickup that appears just ahead of you and forces you to slow, then peels off at a pullout right before a hazard you would have not avoided at the speed you were at.
And there are historical edges too. The black sedan motif, chrome grille, mid-century body, haunts desert two lanes. Motor riders tell of a headlight that places them in the periphery, but never quite resolves into a bike. Our inbox holds a story where a cyclist drafted a phantom taillight down a foggy grade, only to realize at the bottom there was no reflector, just a red smear of air.
Could machines carry imprints? Museums of cursed objects exist for a reason. A car is a capsule of breath and fingerprints, a container for fights and love, and last phone calls. If trauma seeds a loop in the world, steel and glass are no less soiled than wood and stone. And no, that's not me declaring every weird tell light a haunting. It's me saying I take seriously the evidence that some drivers share a road with the stories that have learned how to steer.
International variants multiply the theme. Delhi's phantom bus roars through intersections that cameras record as empty. Japan's ghost trains open doors on interiors that belong to another era, then slide into nothing. Eastern Europe keeps the older template alive with the devil's carriage, except the ride. Lose your way home. The form updates with technology. The archetype stays put. All right, so spectral vehicles on the side of the road. I mean, you spoke earlier towards the start of the podcast tonight, Sarah Lee, about where you've seen taillights, and you followed them, and then as you got closer, they've vanished into nothingness and things like that.
Yeah, usually kind of more in foggy areas and stuff like that. But yeah, most definitely. I came from Washington with a lot of rain and a lot of fog. So yeah, sometimes in the fog, sometimes in the rain. But when you got close enough, like there was no way they could have exited the freeway. Or right. You might be coming up on somebody and go around them because they're going slow, but then there's nobody you're going around. You get in the other lane and then there's no car.
No, absolutely. So. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, just talking about this type of thing. It's not just, you know, ghosts and stuff that are stopping on the side of the road. I posted again, a blog on our website, solanoparanormal.com. My mom already knows I posted it, so hopefully she doesn't care that I share it here. It's kind of a longer post about why I believe in spirits based on what I've learned from her and her experiences. But since we're talking about cars, one of them she talked about was a family member that helped her get through. I just can't remember at the moment if it was rain or fog. I think it was rain that she was struggling to see through to get safely, but she could feel a family member there that helped her get safely through it. Wow. So I just find it very fascinating that there's so many different ways, you know, this happens. It's not just seeing a spirit, but you might feel a spirit take you to safety as well.
Absolutely. And those stories happen regularly as well, where a loved one will guide you to safety in your moment of distress when you need the help. A loved one will all of a sudden materialize and help you home. I mean, it's just the accounts are endless and we could talk about them all night. But anyway, moving on to section six. Now we're going to talk about safety and coping. Practical time. After the uncanny hits mid-drive, your job isn't to solve a mystery, it's to survive. Breathe, 4 in, 4 hold, 6 out. It unclenches your hands. Ease off, don't jab the brakes. If you need to stop, pick a turnout with sidelines. Hazards on, if you're shaking, call a friend on speaker. Witnesses calm the animal brain.
When you're safe, document it. Voice memo first, unfiltered, messy, time, mile marker, weather, and what you felt before what you saw. Feelings, timestamps, events. Jot anything technical, dash cam, make and model, audio rolling or not, any alerts from your car systems. Those boring details make the difference later between a shrug and a data point.
And if you report it to us or any team, we'll ask non-leading questions, not did you see a woman in white, but describe the figure, if any. Not was it cold, but what changed in your body? We're not after a good ghost story. We're after an honest one. Honest stories pile into patterns. Patterns point the truck towards the next stakeout.
Sorry. Be kind to yourself. Fear means your system works. Whether the cause was psychology, physics, or the paranormal, your body did the right thing by alerting you. Treat the aftershocks like you would after a near miss on the freeway. Hydrate, decompress, talk it out. And if you light a porch pole for someone who never made it home, that's field work too.
All right. All right, Sarah Lee, let's wrap it up and go into segment 7.
All right. Can I just say one more thing? I know we're trying to finish up.
Go for it.
Another video. Can we look up and talk about third man? It's a thing that happens when people are in like car accidents, traumatic events. Uh-huh. A lot of them are car accidents though, where they see somebody, they think they're an EMT or a stranger that stopped on the side of the road to help them. Occasionally, rarely, it can even be a family member that's alive or passed, but they help them stay alive through the whole traumatic event. And then when they like are rushed to the hospital and they're aware and they're like, oh, well, what about that one person who stopped and helped me until the police got there? Nobody right. saw them. It right. was, they call it like third man something. And it's,
oh wow,
it's an experience a lot of people.
About it, but yeah, I didn't know that's what it was called.
Yeah. So, but yeah, let's go. Let's finish out here.
All right. On you go, Sarah Lee. It's all yours.
Oh, yes. I'm reading backwards. It's usually you first. We stood at the three roads tonight and listened. A boy in a jacket who keeps his promise to return. A figure who refuses to let a driver die alone. And a bride who runs, breaks hearts, and bumpers in equal measure. We heard about machines that learn to haunt and highways that nudge behavior like a hand on the wheel.
If the road teaches anything, is that travel doesn't end on arrival. Some journeys replay until someone witnesses them with care. If that someone is you, late, tired, spooked, remember the playbook, then tell the tale. Not to scare, but to map. Maps help the living and sometimes the lost.
Next week, we step off the shoulder and into the pawn shop, charged and cursed objects. The ring that hums in the drawer, the painting that won't stay where you left it, the thrift store teddy that smells like cologne at 3 a.m. If your house has an item that behaves like a roommate, send us the story.
All right, guys. For now, eyes up, head hands steady, and if the passenger seat sighs when you hit the country line, tell them we're still on the air. Maybe that's all they needed to hear tonight. All right, folks. From Sarah Lee and myself, Mitch, we are out of here. Good night, everybody.
Good night.